If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome everyone to Dragon Quest FM, where we talk about and obsess over Dragon Quest. I'm Austin.
I'm BJ.
That was like the most reserved I'm BJ that you've ever done on here.
This is my name. I'm BJ.
But you're not excited about it.
I'm not today. I'm just like, hey, I'm here. I'm BJ. I'm your new best friend.
Yeah, and this week's episode, I decided to do something kind of fun. With Dragon Quest II, it's been a hot minute since we've done anything with Dragon Quest II because, you know, it's an older game. We covered it whenever I was playing through it, like back in the first season of the podcast. And then we've talked about it, you know, bring it up in conversation here and there, but it's never been like a topic on the podcast in a while now. And so it just seemed like a good time to do this. And for some background reference, I've just been doing a lot of Dragon Quest research for a project I'm working on.
Right.
And I found all sorts of cool Dragon Quest II facts, among other games too, but I found enough with Dragon Quest II that I just thought it was really cool. And most of it was stuff that I'd never seen before. And I was like, we should just do an episode on this so I can A, get to tell you about it, because I think it's stuff that you would be excited for too.
Right.
But also get to share it with everybody, because there's just some cool things about Dragon Quest II that I never realized. And this is not one of those games that I've done a lot of like research on before. For those of you who maybe missed that episode in season one, I really like Dragon Quest II more than a lot of people, and I think I liked it because of how much it made me angry.
Man, you got so mad at that game. I will never forget how many just rage texts I got about it while you're playing through it for the first time.
Finding the sunken treasure on this was the iOS version that I played initially.
Yeah.
Finding the sunken treasure in the iOS version is still one of the most painful things I've ever had to do in any game.
Yeah.
Still convinced there was like a glitch or bug or something going on, because I mean, I definitely went to that spot a whole lot, and it just eventually was there.
Like, you went there so often, like, you just kept, and you sent me screenshots, and you were like, you sent me screenshots, and you sent me screenshots of guides, and you're like, it's not working.
Yeah, there was, like, so many obstacles to overcome, because it was like, I was just playing the game, and then I was like, I couldn't find it, so I looked up a guide, but the problem was, at least then, at the time, this has been, you know, like, 5 years now, but at the time, it was like the guides that were available were all mostly based on Dragon Warrior 2 or the GBC version.
Yeah.
There weren't versions of Dragon Quest 2 like that had gone over to iOS. And so the names were different. And so I was having to cross-reference names with everything else. And it was just a huge pain in the butt. And so, yeah, I did. I was like, look, this says it's here in the ocean. I'm here in the ocean. And it is not here. And then there was like an NPC you had to go talk to, and I went and did that, and it was just like a big to do. Anyway, Sunken Treasure, definitely recommend. Malroth is still, you know, I've mentioned in lots of episodes how he's kind of like the Dragon Quest boss my mind always goes to because of how much he killed me. And, you know, I like Malroth even before Builders 2, because I love human Malroth. But even before that, just as a monster, you know, like I have a Malroth figure and I have a Malroth plush, and I just felt like I owed him something.
You owed him something. I mean, it's true. He showed you the world. He made you a man.
Wow. I don't know where to go from that. Let's just dive in. So I put together five fun facts
dun, 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 dun.
For Dragon Quest II that I wanted to really hit on today. The first one is something that I don't think I've ever brought up on this podcast before. A couple years back, I know I shared it on Twitter, and I know it's on Reddit, because whenever I was doing some research for this, one of the top posts was like a Reddit post. And I was like, huh, that's weird. And it was like my tweet embedded to it. And I had this weird out of body experience for a minute.
Yeah, that's always weird.
Yeah, when you like are researching something and then you like find yourself. Anyway, so I mentioned this on there, but I realize people listen to this podcast that don't have those things. This one thing that I still think is super cool about Dragon Quest II is in originally when they were developing the game, is it had these really cool like pixelated cutscenes that look almost like tapestries that they were going to put in the game, and that would have looked pretty advanced for that time on the Famicom. I mean, it's pretty impressive. You can find one or two of them online still. And if you look at those, like it's pretty impressive. And it looks like the art style that's on the cover of the Japanese version.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And they had to cut this out. So they had these cool pixelated cutscenes that they ended up having to cut out because of memory constraints on the Famicom.
Right.
There just wasn't that much.
That makes sense.
Yeah, there wasn't much space for it. And Dragon Quest II is a big game. I mean, even for its time, you know, it had a very big map, had a lot of content packed into it. And so the development behind this game, they're really trying to, I guess, I don't want to say cut corners because they already did so much into it, but it was kind of just like they had this massive idea for it. And because it was on the Famicom, like they just had to start cutting stuff.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that happened a lot for NES games, that when you, and Famicom games, I mean, that was one of the big constraints of the system, and really that I know I've read that made developers really like working for it, especially now going back and doing it, was that it is incredibly limited, what you can do with it, and like having to cut things like that would have been awesome, and they're like way ahead of their time, that were just not physically possible until the end of the system's life cycle.
Yeah. And so like the cutscenes look really cool, but I've always wondered, like, this would have been really confusing though for Dragon Warrior 2 because of the artwork that Dragon Warrior 2 went with. That kind of more like TSR D&D look,
yeah,
that they had. Like, it would be weird seeing these more like chibi anime looking characters in cutscenes.
For Dragon Warrior, not necessarily Dragon, the American version.
The American version, yeah, Dragon Warrior 2.
Yeah, because that would have been just really jarring. Like, you already have the game that looks completely different than that. So having cutscenes and everything as well that were put like that, I could definitely see that being jarring for people. Like, why does this not look like the box?
Yeah, you had this super buff dude like on the cover box, and then you have this squat little almost chibi guy. Yep. In the cutscene, yeah, it would have looked weird for sure. So that was fun fact number one. Fun fact number two is something I discovered a little bit more recently, which is that Cannock Castle actually moved. It was originally put in a different place and it moved. And if you can find the Dragon Quest II vinyl soundtrack, the vinyl record for this.
Right.
The original location of Cannock Castle is on there, on the back. So you can see, because it's the original one, it's the wrong one. Like, that's not where it is in the game. But if you own the Dragon Quest II vinyl, or you have found it somewhere and you look online, if you look at the back cover art, you can see Cannock Castle in the wrong place.
Huh. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess it's because you have to get the physical, you know, stuff underway and get the proofs and get them out there, especially before you know, it was so much easier with email and digital stuff that you had to get them way ahead of time. And that was just one of those things where it had to change for gameplay purposes, but there was no way to change it during production.
Yeah. And I tracked down the back of this because I wanted to see what it looked like, and it was kind of a hard thing to Google for in English, at least.
I bet,
but yes. Thankfully, Shmupulations, which translates a lot of old interviews, and has been like a really cool resource for finding out fun Dragon Quest facts, has a translated interview that covers some of this, and also has a screenshot. It's a little low res, but it has a screenshot of Cannock Castle, the back, the vinyl record, the back of it with Cannock Castle in the wrong place. So if you want to, if you want to see it for yourself, you can just head over there and check it out. So it's on the back there of this record. And I thought that was really cool. And if you, for those of you that are really familiar with Dragon Quest II, if you look at this, you'll look at it and think that, oh, that's location looks familiar. And it's because that's where Lake Cave is. They ended up in the original version, Cannock Castle was where Lake Cave is now. And so what they did, as I read this interview with Yuji Horii, where they had to move it closer because of how hard it was. Dragon Quest II is a hard game.
And like, that is something that is absolutely true based on your experience with it, where you wanted to say that you never played a Dragon Quest game again.
Yeah, for sure. For people who are listening to this, there's some sawing going on at BJ's house. He's not just like, I don't know what that was. It sounded like a long, like, fart.
Yeah, it did. They're sawing outside my door, having a lot of housework done.
Yeah, they're sawing. He's not just being flatulent.
Yes, not this time.
Yeah. But yeah, so it was so hard. And so as they went back and play tested it, they made a lot of corrections, especially early on to like the way combat worked early in the game, because they wanted the game to be challenging, but they were also like, well, okay, once you it makes it really hard to walk from like this area to this other area, because yes, the fights are challenging, but they didn't account for multiple fights initially. like it just wasn't something I guess they thought of. And so the problem was that, okay, yes, this fight is challenging, but then when the random encounter happens so often and you're doing like all these fights between getting to a safe area, then you just die too often. And so one of the ways they corrected this was they moved Cannock Castle closer.
Right. Yeah.
Because Mindenhall cannot heal. You need Cannock to heal you. And so it made, so they moved Cannock Castle closer, and then they moved Lake Cave over here, so that by that time you have Cannock in your party. So when you're walking really, really far over there to Lake Cave, Cannock can toss heals at you.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. But anyway, I just thought that was cool. And I always liked knowing about weird typos.
Yeah. And development decisions like that, too. Like that's.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like this is loosely related. This is not my fun fact. This is just my Dragon Quest brain exploding out right now. But like a kind of related thing to that, too, is that, you know, in the Dragon Warrior promotional materials that made it over here to the States, on the map, there's actually characters from 2 on the map incorrectly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for the first game. And so you can see them up there in the top. I think it's the top left corner. I think I've mentioned that on here before, but yeah, it's, so anyway, kind of sort of related to Dragon Quest II stuff appearing in materials that shouldn't be.
Hmm.
Yeah. So then, fun fact number 3, we've talked a lot about difficulty. And so this kind of just made a logical segue off of this from the cool vinyl record fact. Dragon Quest II gets really, really hard, especially around Cave of Rhone, Cave of Rendorak, and then the Rhone / Rendorak area, depending on what version of the game you play, you know, called different things. I see all the time people like talking about the difficulty, but also I see online a lot where people are like, why is Dragon Quest II so hard? Like, why is it known for being such a hard game? Why do people hate it so much? Because it's hard. Like, what's the story behind this? And so kind of going on along with that, there's actually a good explanation for this too. Early on in playtesting, they moved the castle up closer for you. And they also tweaked the earlier encounters that you get, especially when Mindenhall is alone. Because, I mean, you know, you're by yourself at that point. Of course, it's really easy to die when you're all by yourself. And so they tweaked all that stuff around, but they were also under time constraints in terms of getting out the second game in the series.
Right.
And I mean, you know, it released like what, a year after it hit the market, you know, like a year after the first one. And so there's just a very quick turnaround on all of this. And like, I don't want to say crunch because nobody, you know, in any of the interviews I've read so far, no one said crunch, but it's almost like like from our like modern day perspective of it, like it's almost that kind of sense where like they're rushing, they're staying up late at night. They're working overtime to try to get this game out because they got to get it out for Enix. And anyway, so because of the time constraints, though, they didn't have as much time to work with the later portions of the game and tweak as much. So while they had time early on from playtesters to see their feedback of, oh, I'm dying too much and fix this stuff, they didn't get around to doing that so much in the last half. And so this is why you get some weird things in that area. Like, I feel like sacrifice is probably, anybody who's played Dragon Quest II has probably most likely, unless your luck is really good, sacrifice has probably been a big pain in your butt in like the last, I don't know, what is that, like a fourth of the game? Third of the game? Fourth of the game,
I guess? At least, yeah, at least a quarter.
Yeah, so you have the RNG from sacrifice, and then you also have those enemies that can attack you like three times in a row before you even get a turn, and it just makes it super, super easy for you to die. And like the reason behind this was that they just didn't have time. That wasn't like wholly accounted for. So they... like, I read an interview, I think it's been a couple of years now. It was like a retrospective. I want to say it was Polygon, but maybe it wasn't Polygon, but I want to say that was it. It was a retrospective with Yuji Horii, and they started bringing up something about this, and he went off on just a slight tangent and talked about Dragon Quest II, and basically said, hey, we just didn't have time to play this correctly. Like, yes, this is why it's so hard. We didn't have time to play those later portions as much as we should have. And so that's why you have these enemies that hit you three times and you sacrifice and just make it really, really hard to get through there. Like, yeah, incredibly difficult to get through. So I got two more of my five fun facts left. But before we do that, I think it's time for a little shameless self-promotion.
Shameless, shameless, shameless self-promotion. Shameless, shameless, shameless self-promotion.
You throw in some horns and you got yourself a cake song right there.
It's true. That is the kind of cadence it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. This is shameless self-promotion.
You're right. I didn't even realize when I said that, like, yep, it does.
Yeah. Yeah. You were so close to having a cake song. You need to get Jennifer to just like come in and like start playing a trumpet behind you. You got a cake song.
That's why they call me BG Cakes. Nobody calls me that.
No one calls you that. No, yeah.
Nobody does.
We do have a Patreon page. You can find that at patreon.com/DragonQuestFM if you want to help support this podcast. And a huge shout out to all of our Patreon patrons. We really appreciate all of you guys and just are really thankful for all the support here in season 5, which is nuts.
Yeah, I do not believe it. I'm pretty sure this is like a Mandela effect thing. Like, we think it's season 5, but it's really like season 1. It's like, what's going on? Like, I don't understand how we've been doing this for so long every week.
Yeah. We didn't actually bring that up back when usually every new season we're like, hey, it's a new season. This is nuts.
Yeah.
But now we're like, I don't know, 10 episodes, almost 10 episodes into like season 5, and it's just weird.
Oh, no. Yeah, weird. Mm-hmm.
It is weird. But one day you will wake up from your coma and will learn that I nor this podcast ever existed.
Actually exist. Yeah. Yeah. It's just like I dreamed you into existence, like that Savage Garden song. I dreamed you into life.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, you went from cake to Savage Garden in about 2 minutes.
That's pretty much my high school like playlist there. So that tracks.
Yeah. We here at Dragon Quest FM, we're the best of 90s all day long.
It is true, though, with both. We are the best of the 90s. Like, let's not, like, don't make that as a...
We're both born in the 80s, though.
I know, but, like, we were, you know, adolescents in the 90s. Like, I still consider myself a 90s kid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, for sure. But, yeah. All right. Anyway, I have nothing shameless to promote other than our podcast. Do you have anything?
Yeah, not right now. Just support us on the podcast, and you might get more cake. Like, not actual cake.
Not actual cake.
Talking about, like, sounding like cake sometimes.
Like, he's going the distance. He's going for speed.
I can't even, like, at this point, it's like, I'm just rolling with it.
Yeah. Anyway, getting back over into today's episode, we got two more 5 fun facts.
Right.
A few years ago, I got to this cool thing where I interviewed Nob Agasawara, who translated a number of Dragon Warrior games. Back then, they were still called Dragon Warrior. Also translated like a ton of Pokemon games up until like 2009. And, you know, is responsible for naming some of these. But because of this, I got to ask him a ton of cool questions. And one of them directly relates to Dragon Quest II. And so for people who haven't read that interview, and I know it's been a couple of years, this one seemed on topic. And I thought this is still one of the, he gave a ton of interesting things, like answers and everything, and just some really cool insight into like Enix back in those days. But this is still one of those that like has really stuck with me, which is why he's called Lodo in the Game Boy Color version. And still to this day, I still see people all the time on Twitter saying Lodo. And it's, you know, people who really grew up with that, but there's Erdrick and there's Rodo and there's Lodo, and it's just like so much to keep up with. And so I actually asked him about this, about why Erdrick, these are the descendants of Erdrick, you know, and two, why is it Lodo? Why are these the descendants of Lodo? And I really appreciate his answer. His like candor is just like 10/10, like really appreciate how honest he is with just everything. And he actually said, no, this is a direct quote, by the way. No, just a dumb mistake. I wasn't sure if it was Lodo or Rodo, so I gambled they didn't want Rot and went with Lodo. And neither George, he's talking about his boss at Enix, nor anyone else at Enix USA called me on it, so the typo remained. So I've always found that interesting because of how like prominent, especially with like Americans, I see people using Lodo a lot. And it's very interesting to me that such a small thing like that, you know, has just like, it's stayed in the Dragon Quest vernacular now for what, 25 years, 20, close to 20.
Oh my goodness.
For a while now. And so I find that very, fascinating that something like so small can have such an impact.
Yeah, I know. And I love it with stuff like that. Like, I love just stories like that become a part of like this mythology around a fandom or product or anything. And it turns out it was just a stupid mistake initially. And it was just one of those things that it's like, that it didn't matter at the time. And it's just people latch onto it, and it's just a small detail.
Yeah. But I mean, I can totally get where he's coming from, though.
Oh, totally.
If I were translating a game, I would be like, Rotto.
Rotto. Yeah, I can totally see why that.
Yeah, it doesn't quite roll off the tongue like your cake song.
It's true.
Yeah. And then number 5, I saved what I think is the most interesting one for last. Because this one just blows my mind, and I like to think I'm pretty ingrained within like Dragon Quest fandom, not like myself, like as a person ingrained, but like in terms of like, I'm honed into like reading articles about it all the time, and like chatting with people about it all the time, like that kind of ingrained. And I've never heard this before, and I just found it fascinating. So the ending to Dragon Quest II was almost totally different. They had a complete alternate ending for Dragon Quest II, and it was like super, super dark.
Really?
Yeah. Have you heard of this?
No. Okay. This is all new to me.
Okay. Yeah. This was brand new to me too. And it kind of like blew my mind. I don't want to be hyping it too much, but I mean, it really did. It blew my mind. And I was like, oh, I got to tell BJ about this. And then I was like, you know what? No, I'll save it.
I don't know about this one at all. Like, you and I have never talked about it.
So this again is according to Yuji Horii. But in the original ending, they went back and forth through some of the different endings from my understanding of it. And one of the endings for Dragon Quest II before they settled on the real one was that the Prince of Kanik sacrifices himself there after the final battle. Kanik sacrifices himself, and it's only Moonbrook and Mindenhall that get out of there. Okay. Kanik dies, which is already on brand, but also darker.
Right,
he dies like for real, like you can't bring him back. He sacrifices himself. So Mindenhall, Moonbrook, they flee back to Mindenhall Castle for the big celebration, because now, you know, they saved the world. Kanik, you know, paid the ultimate price here, but they've saved the world. And from what I can understand, it kind of just resumes along like the regular ending, you know, people are like congratulating you or whatever. But then it gets worse. But then like Kanik's little sister, runs up shouting something like, "You killed my brother," or "You got my brother killed, you got my brother killed," and then stabs Prince Minhal in the chest, and you die, and then that's at the end of it.
Whoa. I didn't realize I had myself muted still. That is not what I would have expected.
Yeah, that's like really dark, right? Like Kanik is dead and then you get stabbed.
Yeah, like they went like all dark on that one. Like they went as different from Dragon Quest One as they could have.
Yeah, for sure. And then the reason they decided against this, the reason they decided against it is because they decided it was too sad, and it was really from, this is like compiled from a few different interviews that I've just kind of cross-referenced to try to find like a fuller story here. But from what I can gather, it was really Koichi Nakamura, who was telling Yuji Horii, like, "I don't know, man, this is like really sad way to end a game." And
wow.
Yeah. So from what I can gather, we kind of have Nakamura to thank for not that super bleak Dragon Quest II ending.
Yeah, because that's like you said, that's dark. They're just, man, that would be, and for an NES game too, like that wasn't really something that was done in games at that point.
Yeah, and I also want to add this, because I found, after I actually started hunting down more information on this, I found an interview where Yuji Horii was talking about this briefly, and he said, at the time, I'm not sure how long ago this interview was, but it's been a while. You know, it's been at least a decade. But Yuji Horii said back then that he still wants to use that ending at some point. So now that I've read that, where Yuji Horii was like, "Yeah, that was the ending, and I really liked that ending. We just didn't get to use it. I'd like to use it one day." So now I'm kind of like, they've said Dragon Quest 12 is gonna be darker. So it's like this how Dragon Quest 12 ends?
Like that would be great. I would love that, like, because they said they're starting this whole new thing. It's going to be darker. That would be a good ending to do it, especially if it was the real ending instead of just the before credits ending.
Yeah. And so, like, that would be very unexpected. And also, I mean, I don't want to just go completely, like, you know, speculation here, but I have wondered. I'm like, okay, if Dragon Quest XII is going to be darker, and, you know, Yuji Horii said after 11's development that he wanted to do something completely like unexpected with 12.
Okay.
And I know at one point that he said he wanted to do something unexpected with 12, but also I know at one point that you and I were like, well, maybe that's what he means by that weird, like, maybe it's not going to be turn-based kind of thing. It's going to be
right.
Darker. Maybe that's what he means by it. But now I'm like, that would be very unexpected if the... I mean, it would be darker and unexpected if you die at the end.
Yeah, it would. But I would also like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would probably be fine, I guess. I don't know. On some level, I'm like, yeah, that would be cool and kind of shake things up a bit. But on the other hand, I'm like, everything is so dark all the time anyway, and both in the real world, but also there's just like a huge like push for all this darkness in like movies and gaming and stuff now. That I'm just kind of like, I really appreciate Dragon Quest. Don't get me wrong, Dragon Quest has dark moments, but I also appreciate the generally upbeat nature that most of the games have, and the happy endings that we typically get to see.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So I do feel like something would get lost there.
It could. It might not feel as much like a Dragon Quest at this point.
Yeah, like when I beat a Dragon Quest game, it's always like, yay, I'm happy. This is, I like, the character's got a happy ending and it's all good. And it's not like, oh, these characters are all dead now. You know, like Final Fantasy games had done in the last like 20 years. But there's like a catharsis, I guess, at the end of a Dragon Quest game, because it's happy and because it tends to be more fairy tale. So I don't know. But anyway, but me having read this, whenever he said he would still like to use it one day, I've kind of been like, is this the ending for 12 now?
Yeah. I mean, that is very true.
Yeah. So anyway, so those are my five fun facts. I hope you learned a lot.
I did.
But anyway, I hope that you guys listening have also got to hear something cool, because I thought these things were really cool too. Remember patreon.com/DragonQuestFM if you want to support this podcast. And you can talk to us on Twitter at DragonQuestFM. And you can find me personally on there at DragonQuestin.
And you can find me on Twitter as at Professor Beej. I'm on Mastodon as Beej at dice.camp. And you can talk to us on Discord at discord.geektogeekmedia.com.
Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.